Welcome to Haldane's Law Matters. Thank you. Today we continue our fascinating conversation with Bernard Chan, and I should introduce him again as a politician, a businessman, a civic leader, and a pivotal figure shaping Hong Kong's political and cultural landscape. Bernard, I don't do you justice with that short introduction, but I hope you'll forgive me for that. Can I just mention 2019? Because when you were talking about the development of Hong Kong and what changed it, and I hadn't really thought about SARS, and it all came back to me when you were explaining it. I remember all that stuff now. But 2019 was seminal as well, wasn't it? Because that rocked the boat enormously, and from a Beijing point of view, it was a real problem. So I suppose if we were charting the history and the changes, if we hadn't had 2019, we wouldn't have probably had the national security law pushed through in the way that it was, although it was always on the books. It was always meant to be enacted in any event, going back 25 years. So that had its impact, of course, which is still resonating through the city.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely correct. I don't speak for the central government, but I assume Beijing has always been quite accommodating to Hong Kong, right, from the outset. Like you said, we were tasked to enact the Article 23 legislation, but I guess we never found the right timing, and we didn't want to push through it. We did try in 2003, and it was not successful, and so on and so on. Now, again, going back to my earlier analysis, I said, well, you have one-third people that always have a doubt on everything you do, right?
Yeah.
So that's one-third. So before you even get to 2019, let me also remind you another date, and that's 2012. Now, what happened in 2012? Well, at that time, there's this rumors and talk about some national education. Now, that freaked out everybody. By the way, the government don't control the curriculum, even today.
Yeah.
The government outsources everything out. So the individual school choose their own curriculum. And of course, I think at that time, there was some organization out there who are maybe more sympathetic to Beijing, and they came out with a set of curriculum. But that curriculum is not a government curriculum, right? But anyway, it doesn't matter. So the rumors went out. And again, smartly, the opposition, right? Again, it's not that one-third. They play up to the middle, right? To the middle. That tends to be apolitical. But then all of a sudden, they say, wow, there will be curriculum to brainwash your child. Right? Oh, my God. You remember, Jonathan?
Yep.
They freak out everybody, right? It's like, oh, how dare you? You're going to teach us communism, whatever. Boom, the whole thing got shelved.
Yeah.
Because you don't have the support of the people now. Because you, all you need is to stir up the people in the middle, right? And they freak out.
Yeah.
That's how I see it. Now, that's my interpretation of that. Same as 2019. Yeah. When the 2019 came with the extradition bill. By the way, we have extradition arrangement with the US, with UK, but we have not one with China.
For the record, I think we should have had an extradition treaty. The idea that someone can nip across the border either way and escape crime is, frankly, ludicrous.
So anyway, so perhaps my former boss, the chief executive Carrie Lam, saw the opportunity at the time because of the Taiwan case. We thought, okay, maybe we use this as an occasion to pass the law so we can extradite the murderer to come back, whatever that is. Anyway, so now, again, this thing being played up to the middle group and saying, oh my God, now they can come in anytime and snatch you, blah, blah, blah. I think we lost almost everybody in the middle. It freaked out everybody. The rest is history now, right? Now, it all boils down to is the trust. There's always a little bit of a trust issue. And the opposition always play up the fear that China will do this, China will do that. And frankly, China, honestly, I mean, not just because I've been associating with the establishment, I say, but I think China has been very restrained all this year. I tell you, in 2019, in the middle, I forgot what month now, it's got to be between sometime between July to December, when, if I just remind everyone what gone through Hong Kong those months, it came across so many times in my head that is China's going to move in?
Yep.
Is China's going to move in? Because it's a chaos. Nowhere in the world where any government will allow law and order be gone. There was no law and order in the streets. I was so scared walking out in the lunchtime in Central, not far from your office here.
Yes.
I was so scared, right? How can that be possible? In any other countries, they'll send in their reserve, they'll send in the National Guard, will do whatever, right? But yet, so I was thinking, is China going to move? China's going to move in or what? They never did. Now, many, many months, and I don't forget now, I so happened to talk to someone in the circle, in the politics in China, and the guy said to me, now, of course, he doesn't represent the government. Well, he doesn't represent the top, so I don't know how to what extent you can quote his name, he quotes his comment, but he basically said to me, "Is we were not going to let another Tiananmen Square to haunt us for another 30, 40 years.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So they could have done that, but they didn't. They were restraining. They want to let this issue to be dealt with by your own. Now, of course, with the help of the law. They have to pass the law.
Of course.
To, yeah. But they did not send people, because as soon as they send people in, or in fact, they are PLA already in Hong Kong, right? As soon as they mobilize those, that's the history of one country, two system.
Yep.
That's the history.
Yep. But they preserved it, they even preserved through it. All the chaos.
Exactly.
I mean, 2019.
It came across so many times, I thought, oh my God, this is the end of our two system, right? How are we going to solve this situation? I cannot see how things would ever restore back to normal. But they managed, the Chinese managed to your point, to preserve this one country. Yes. It means so much to them. I am pretty sure up in Beijing, there must be different camps with different direction. I'm pretty sure some will probably say, hell with you, you know.
Hawks and doves.
Yeah, yeah. But at the end, thank goodness, they prevailed that this is so important to China, to retain this one country, two system as it is.
Yes. So you have no doubt the Chinese government really wants Hong Kong to thrive under this experimental two-track system.
Absolutely.
Which is unique to the world.
Now, I have met with many senior government officials in Beijing multiple times. Each and every time, they highlighted the fact that one country system is important and must remain, okay?
It's been extended, I think, hasn't
well,
it?
Well, no. See, this is a tricky part. So you have to understand from the Chinese perspective.
Right.
So anyway, when Xi Jinping came to Hong Kong to officiate to inaugurate the new term back in 2022, July. I was in the room because I was part of the outgoing administration. So I was in the room, but of course it's televised. Everyone see it, right? I was so expecting that he will come and address this whole issue about 50 years because everyone talk about the 50 years. And back in 2022, it's halfway 25 years.
Yeah.
So logically, he's coming, right? So I thought in his address, he will mention
the elephant in the room.
Elephant in the room, right? What is going to happen after 2047, right? For many different reasons, right? The investors and, again,
mortgages and so on.
Now, let me go back to this again, my number. If you are that one-third again that never trust them, you probably don't even trust it's a 2047. You probably think that they can take back tomorrow, right? But for the rest of us who believe it, right? Well, but what happened after 2047? So it's only logical that you expect him to say something about it. But guess what? In his 30-minute speech, right? By the way, you can go online today and Google it. It's there. There's an English official English translation. Guess what? In that entire 30 minutes, that four numbers, 2047, were never mentioned. So I was disappointed. I was in the room. I can't say that I understand 100%. I probably get 70, 80% instantly, right? But I was looking out for those four numbers. But those four numbers never mentioned. So I was so disappointed. And guess what? No international press actually followed that speech because maybe there's no newsworthy there, right? Ha! Huh. But then I went back and read the script again, both in Chinese and in English. Did he not respond to that? He did. But not in a way that you and I was expecting.
Pick up. Yeah.
First of all, we were expecting he say something about 2047, right? But there's no mentioning of it. Why? So I went back to the basic law, our constitution. Nowhere in the constitution it ever, ever mentioned 2047. There's no such thing called 2047. So there is no such thing called renewal date, right? Is that terminal date or renewal? There's no such thing because he never mentioned 2047. So why did we come up with 2047? Jonathan, why did we keep saying 2047? Where did it come from? You remember?
Because I mean, 50 years. I was going to say they calculated the 50 years,
right?
And came up with the date.
That's right. So where's the 50 years come from in the Constitution? So there's only one line, one sentence that covers 50 years. So the capitalist model remain unchanged for 50 years. That's all he said.
Yeah, not the system, but the capitalist model.
But more importantly, it didn't say it stopped after 50 years. It didn't say it should be renewed after 50 years.
I get it.
He didn't say anything. He just said the capitalist model will remain unchanged for 50 years. So it's kind of open-ended. In a way, I'm sure from your point of view as a lawyer, it's not very helpful and he doesn't actually say anything. So you can all go to the online. Don't listen to me. Go online right now.
That's very interesting.
But they never mentioned 2047. Yeah. So therefore, that's why he never actually has to talk about 2047. Okay, that's number one. But in his speech, Jonathan, this is interesting. He first started off something like this, right, in English, something like, oh, the one country, two system is fantastic. The 1.4 billion people think it's great. The Hong Kong people think it's great. The international community think it's great. So why should it stop? It should continue. Now, the Chinese character they use, to me, it somewhat means like indefinite. He said, oh, it kind of should. I think the official English translation is something else. But it kind of means like it should continue, right? Now, it's open-ended too, right? Now, every word that be put in a speech means something in the Chinese context.
Carefully thought about.
Carefully thought about it. Now, did he say something about the future of the one country, two system? He did. At least that's how I interpret. Now, it's just me, but if you can trust my 27 years in working with them, maybe I have a better chance of understand what the guy actually meant, right? Now, he started off in saying what, Jonathan? He said 1.4 billion people think it's great. Basically, it really comes down to this. The one country, two system, it's not just for Hong Kong's interest.
No.
It might have been 30, 40 years ago when it was first being created, right? To assure Hong Kong people that life goes on unchanged for at least 50 years. Well, that's 30 some plus years ago, right? Today's China is different. Everything is different.
Yes.
So the one country, two system, has to be good for the entire China. It cannot be just for Hong Kong. Because otherwise, whoever the leader, 20-some years later, how is he or she going in front of the 1 billion people to tell them that, oh, only the 7 million people entitled to these special privileges? It cannot be.
Yeah.
So Hong Kong must offer value to the entire China. And we are. And hence the point is, why would China want another city like Shanghai and Shenzhen?
Plenty of cities like that.
They need Hong Kong to serve that special interest for them.
Particularly today.
Especially today. So that's the two system. It's good for China. If everyone here in this town thinks that the two system is just for us, oh my goodness, we're doomed to fail. It can't be just for us. So it comes down to this point. So long Hong Kong can continuously provide that special value to China, why stop? It should continue indefinitely. That's why I think that's what the guy meant. But it's up to us. It's up to Hong Kong. So I feel somewhat sorry sometime right now. I think it's too many people here try to second guessing what Beijing wants, right? No, don't expect Beijing to tell you what to do, right? If they are telling us what to do, then we're not really adding value to them. We need to create value. We have to do things that
are exceptional,
that they haven't thought about. Yeah. That you have value for them. And they'll learn. Then they will have to evolve again. Now, they can copy us, sure. But then we have to keep evolving, stay ahead of the game. Future of Hong Kong is always staying ahead, use our two-system advantage to help China. And with that, that one-country system can go on forever.
And I can tell you this, Bernard, that there have been occasions that I know of, I've been involved in it, where it's been perfectly plain that they look to Hong Kong to see how our legal system works. They also look to Germany and to Britain and to other countries around the world to see how their legal systems work. They are intent on making sure they develop and they develop successfully, at least from a legal perspective, well, I can say that.
Thanks for reminding me this point. In his 30-minute speech, right, so he covered this part. He also, first of all, said something about like Hong Kong, you have four particular strengths, right, that he mentioned each of them. And then towards the end of his speech, he also mentioned four hopes, what he wants Hong Kong to do, right? Just now, I said I was so prepared for him to come and address this whole 2047, this one country. So I was expecting that. There's something that I did not expect, but it really shocked me. I think that's probably the biggest shock of everything, is that he mentioned our common law system twice, both in the beginning and towards the end when he mentioned the four hopes. I have not recalled any senior central government leader ever mention about the uniqueness of our legal system. Never, right? But he did not just talk about the legal system. Xi Jinping specifically mentioned
the common law
jurisdiction. Now, clearly, again, if you believe in what I said earlier, they chose every word very carefully.
Yeah.
The fact that he mentioned common law specifically as it is,
yeah,
it's not for Hong Kong people. I think he's telling the international community that the legal system in Hong Kong will remain as it is. And that's the key, single most important feature of the two system.
It's fantastic. And I just hope that the international community listens.
Unfortunately, they did not really report why. But the fact that he came all the way to Hong Kong, specifically mentioned it twice,
yes,
in the speech, really tells you they see the value of that two system and specifically the legal system being different from them.
Yes. It's a good and optimistic story that you tell, because it tells us that it's working and China's happy with the way in which it's working and it wants us to be exceptional.
Yes. And contrary to the optics from the rest of the world, yeah, unfortunately, they kept saying, oh, we're being
crushed.
Yeah. Now, having said that, though, I agree. There are certain things we have to be becoming more one country.
Yeah.
Right. We cannot pretend that we're not part of China anymore. We are part of China. So they reminded us that, hey, the only reason why you have two systems, because you're under one country. Now, I have to say, I did not even have that in the beginning of my political career.
Yeah.
Because somehow we were being told that, oh, we are different, we are separate, we are away from them. That has changed. Now, we have to be far more sensitive today. Even when I make my comments overseas, I need to be very respectful too. I hope this is still okay for me to say this. So I was blindsided to accept a BBC interview. When I say blindsided, it was my fault. I didn't check what I get myself into. So I accepted an interview with Hard Talk.
Oh my goodness.
Without actually knowing what Hard Talk is.
You were
about.
On Hard Talk?
I was on Hard Talk. I was defending Hong Kong, but I didn't even know what the nature of Hard Talk is about. So I volunteered myself for that. In the show, defending the legal system. I was saying Hong Kong legal system remained da-da-da-da-da-da. And all of a sudden, the anchor turned that question around. So are you saying the Chinese law are no good? Ooh.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, and that was all before 2019. That was April 2019.
How did you bat that one away, Bernard?
I kind of forgot, but you can only imagine that I was like sweating my way.
Oh, boy.
You know, so we had to be respectful, right? Too often we took advantage of the other system and highlighting the uniqueness of the two systems, our system. But I think today we need to be respectful to both. Now, that's why it's never easy for Hong Kong. We cannot just be one system. We need to be understanding to both systems.
Yes.
Right? That's the survival of Hong Kong.
I can ask you a question, this. It's my sense that the pendulum is swinging and that Hong Kong people are now more interested in the mainland, are more trusting than they were. There are obviously a lot of people going to Shenzhen, myself included, on a very regular basis. I think there's a changing sense in society here and a greater integration. Now, am I being over-optimistic or do you think you see the same thing happening?
You know, you would assume so, right? Because like the head of the immigration came out last few days ago and said there was 4 million people in and out of Hong Kong over the last holiday, right?
Yeah.
Now, 4 million in and out, maybe at least 2 million people come in and come out.
Yeah.
And how many of the 2 million mainlanders and how many of the Hong Kong people? But anyway, it doesn't matter. Whatever that number is, a big number. So in other words, a lot of people are going into the mainland China, right? So you would assume that should have a better understanding of what's actually happening there. But then, yet at the same time, I hear still stories about many of our young people would not want to go to the mainland China. So, well, maybe 2019 is definitely the lowest point, right? And I'm sure the most radicalized one would probably have left Hong Kong. I don't know. But I do hope that the more and more people get to understand from the Chinese perspective. I think that's important. Even like me, I mean, I went to Guangzhou and Shenzhen recently because I hear so much about what's happening there. So I said, I got to see it for myself, right? It's just amazing. I just give you one other fact, right, Jonathan? So this is about 2 months ago when this thing about DeepSeek just came around, right? So I was asked publicly what I think of DeepSeek and whether they are as good as ChatGPT and other AI tools, right? I said, I don't know. How would I know? I don't know. But I tell them a story. I said, what I do know, though, is if you were to ask me 10 years ago, if I would ever buy a Chinese-made car, 10 years ago, and my answer to that is, oh, we make car? I don't even know we make car, let alone I will buy one 10 years ago. Today, in my company, I bought 5 Chinese-made car. You know how scary that is?
Yeah.
They came out of nowhere, and wow, Shenzhen has always been cheap, right? Growing up in Shenzhen, it's always cheap. You go there to buy counterfeit, everything's cheap, food is cheap. But today, they're still cheap, but better.
Much better.
Much better. I think this is an amazing wake-up call for Hong Kong.
Yeah.
I think we've been too complacent, me included.
Yeah. All of us.
All of us.
Yeah.
And we look down. We look down on Shenzhen, look down on China, and not just China. We look down on ASEAN.
True.
We never pay attention to them until now. Because, my goodness, I mean, you're going to have a lot of headwinds working with the Americans and elsewhere, and ASEAN all of a sudden became a very logical partner. But did we ever pay respect to these people? No, because money was so easily made with China, amazing economic growth. So all our attention is just on making money off from China. But anyway, I hope our younger generation will try to understand more about them. I mean, they came a long way and they worked their ass off to come to where they are today.
True.
They deserve it. And we have to understand from their perspective, they earn their status.
Yeah.
They didn't cheat it on other people. They work hard to get to where they are. So I think this part is not enough that we understand about the evolution, what China has gone for the last 30 years, 40 years. Economically, culturally, it's amazing. I mean, if you go to M+ Museum, which I'm the chair, and you go to the Sick Collection, where there are a lot of these art pieces that they are the Chinese contemporary artists, and you see how it tells a story of how China have came from opening up in the late 80s and to now. No other country is able to achieve so much in such a short time. Whether you like the party or not, you must give credit to what they have achieved in 30, 40 years. So if you ask an average person in China today, now of course today the economic downturn, they're not happy, right? But all in all though, if you ask them, they're all better off from what they were before, right? They're proud, very proud of their achievement now. They're not happy today, you know, because of the economy, but the fact that they came around. And so we have to be more understanding to where they come from. Now, I'm not saying you should agree with them, disagree, but not understanding is to our demise. So the Hong Kong future is about able to add value to the mainland. So you need to first understand what they're going through, and then you have to figure out, well, how I'm going to create the value for them. Where are the gaps you can add value? But to not engaging them is the biggest mistake.
Yes. Yes. Can I switch for a moment, if I may, to our Hong Kong Foundation? Because I'm familiar with it, because I was shown around it and understand a little bit about it. And for those listeners that have never heard of it, it was, I think, created by Tung Chi Wah, if I'm not mistaken. And it's a foundation, but it's also a think tank that the government pays attention to. Can you just tell listeners a little
yes.
bit, just give them a sense of what that's about?
Yeah, our Hong Kong Foundation was established just over 10 years ago by our former chief executive, Mr. Sieh Tung, as you alluded to. And I was not involved in the very beginning. I think it was only until 2017 that Mr. Tung invited me. And I suspected at the time it was established in 2014, probably right after another big protest then. So the foundation is a think tank. So I think at the time, the focus is more on a lot of these domestic issues that has been long-standing issues such as housing, affordability, to youth mobility, and all these stuff. So it was primarily a think tank.
Mm.
And of course, with Mr. Tung being the founding chair, he was able to bring in a lot of his supporters to come and support this foundation. And then over time, we also extend beyond just a think tank. So it's not just a research advocacy work alone. We also do a lot of promotion of Chinese cultural studies. In fact, we produce a curriculum as well, a lot of Chinese curriculum. So a lot of schools use our curriculum. In fact, so much so that today, even the civil servants college asked my colleague from our unit to go and teach them about what's happening on China. Right? So we do that. another division of the foundation, we are writing the history of Hong Kong, the Chronicles. So we are tasked to do that. And we also do a lot of outreach. And so I took over about 2 years ago, Mr. Tung, with his health issue. So he was kind of like an executive chairman. But about 2-3 years ago, his health would not allow him to continue. So I was nominated to take over his position. And so I became the chairman of the foundation. And of course, I see that there's another new task for the foundation. So we'll continue to do our think tank. So we work, as you put it earlier, we work very closely with the different bureaus to help them with policy. Now, of course, we are independent from the government, so there's no guarantee that the government take on our advice. But one difference is this, Jonathan, because I know I deal with the government all these years. So I know it's no point that if you don't work with them, you just come up with some idea. I've done so many of these similar exercises in the past where we gave great ideas, but we never see from their perspective in how to execute them, like I mentioned earlier in your podcast. And so guess what? You give them the idea, say thank you, and they shelf it. Nothing happened. But today, when I told my colleague, I said, hey, we have to work closely with them to understand their concerns so that we have a better chance of getting the policy across. No point that we're just another talk shop. Right? We don't have the resources to support talk shop. I want action. So I want to make sure that whatever we are advising them is likely to be adopted. So we work closely, but then we still remain very independent. Right? So, and we work with other stakeholders too. So not just the government, we work with other private sector as well. Now, but we were never going to work with one individual company. A developer cannot come to us and sponsor us to work for them, no. But they can come to us to look to support us to do something maybe in the interest of Hong Kong.
Yes.
Right? The development of new territories, for example, that kind of thing. But we cannot just work for one individual company or anyway. So that's one side of it. But the other aspect that when I took over, more pressing issue. So housing, education, these are issues that is ongoing, will probably remain ongoing
forever.
For a long time, right?
Forever.
But there are another very pressing issue, and that is Hong Kong's profile and virtually lost from the 2019 onward to the COVID. So we lost our entire Hong Kong profile in the
brand
world.
Name.
Brand name. And worse, today, thanks to the geopolitics, I don't think anybody would want to invite our government officials, right? Unless you are a friendly country around this region. But first, I don't think they will go to the US. They're not going to go to Europe and so on and so on. It's very difficult to get our voice heard from G to G, government level, right? Even at the business level, it's not so easy anymore. I think a lot of the business executive would prefer to stay out of the limelight. They don't mind have the private one-on-one talking to you, do deals. But if you ask them to go publicly, to comment on anything, they probably will stay out of it, right? Like Giving Today too, it's so complex, the whole thing. So apart from the business, then in the past you have the academia. But today, wow, especially the US, right? Especially if you are in a science and technology, no. It's almost kind of decoupling.
Yes.
They don't want to associate with you. They're so scared that they'll be accused of what sort of thing. So even that front is facing some headwind. Thank goodness, the cultural side is still okay, which I'm involved with. When last year, we signed 31 MOUs with all the big names institutions in the world, from the MoMA to the Tate Modern to you name it, V&A. We're still able to do so because I suppose no one can deny people-to-people connectivity still. So that part is still okay. But of course, you never know whether they will be recognized or not. So coming back to the foundation, so even though, of course, we are very closely associated with the administration, right? People will see that. But I think we still have that channel. So people, if they want to quote anything, want to use any of the research, is still coming to us. They were not going to get from the government, but they'll come to us for the data and everything. So I think we must use this channel to stay our dialogue open to our international counterparts. Hong Kong cannot just be like completely written off, right? So the timing is so important right now to use these third sector to stay connected. Although I must say, it's not easy.
Yeah.
It's not easy, but we cannot completely opt out from reaching out.
But we're beginning to stir again, and some of the arts are playing a role in the international field. And we still have Art Basel, for example. And we had Coldplay, of course. Did you go and see Coldplay?
Yes. Well, I didn't go because I tried to avoid the crowd. But everyone I spoke to
said it was great.
It was great, right? Yeah. And we deserve that. So I think we are still doing a bit of a catch up because, after all, we were almost the last city to open up to the world.
Yes.
The last international city open up to the world. And plane tickets still not cheap from far away.
No.
So people haven't come back yet. If they come back, they see from themselves. Then I hope they will somewhat soften their narrative. I think even today, you know, if traveler, you know, senior executive from U.S. company, they are still being told that they should bring a burner phone. They should not use their own laptop, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Thank you for all this insight. It's great. And if you were being asked, as I'm going to ask you now, if there was one particular thing about the future of Hong Kong that gives you hope or you would like to see promoted, what would it be? What would your favorite thing be to see the revival of Hong Kong? Would it be in education? Would it be in the arts? Would it be a change of government policy? It's open sesame. How would you do it, Bernard?
Yeah. Well, let me give you one good story. I love telling stories. I always find that easier for people to understand, just like when I talk about the visa thing. So people can connect to it. I don't want to just give a name of a policy because people don't understand that. Very often, I have visitors from overseas come to ask me, it's like, oh, you have this amazing museum. So does Beijing tell you how to run your museum? I was like, huh. Oh, I see it. I get it. Because that's the narrative that people from overseas see it, right? I say, no, Beijing will never tell me how I run my museum. Nor is Hong Kong government, even though they pay for almost everything, right? We spent $5 billion so far in the West Kowloon Cultural District, the probably the single largest investment government investing in arts and culture. And we only so far half built. We still have another half to finish, and we don't have money right now. So anyway, $5 billion. But yet, they don't tell me how I run. Of course, my appointment came from them, but it's independently run. As a matter of fact, you know, even as a chairman of the board, I don't even get to decide what goes in my museum because it's completely done independently by my curatorial team, right? And my curatorial team is headed by an Australian, and my deputy museum director, he is a South Korean, and my entire team with 27 nationalities. 27 nationalities. So we bring in the best people to come in here. Now, of course, if something do go wrong and stir up here, oh yeah, you bet Hong Kong government will call me and try to find out what did you do, right? Worse, if the problem still over to mainland China become a big issue, oh yeah, you bet somebody will call me too up north. So my biggest nightmare every day is not Beijing or Hong Kong government. My biggest nightmare every day is social media. I just never know. Because you never know, right? We're open society here, right? And everyone has an opinion on anything. Especially if you talk about contemporary art, it's very subjective, right? So everyone has an opinion. And it's no different from anywhere in the world, by the way. These sort of things need to be careful. So my point of view is we bring in the best people. Hong Kong's future is always about bringing the best talent. Think about it, right? Now, this is an important point. Thank you for giving me this chance to explain. Now, I was even so amazed. Now, you think about it, Kusama, when we opened M+, we have the Kusama exhibition. There's 200 pieces of her work, and so amazing, right? Now, we don't own 200 pieces. I don't know how many we have, say a dozen. I don't know actually the exact number. So where did the other pieces come from? It's from everywhere else, right? It's from other museums or other collectors and so on, right? But you think about it. Today, we are just 3.5 years old, M+. So we are like a startup. But when we first opened, we have no track record. So why was all these institutions and collector willing to give us their pieces for us, right? They don't know what they're going to do with them. Why would they trust us? We're a brand new startup, right? It wasn't because we have a fantastic hardware. No, it's a software, people. They trusted us because the people that we brought to Hong Kong have a track record themselves. So it's their track record, I think, that was convincing. Not me. Who the hell cares? I'm a chairman of the board. Who cares? Nobody knows me, right? But they know our team, our people, and they trusted them that their work will be put in good use. And we did. The show was done so amazingly. Unfortunately, half of the show was still at the tail end of our COVID restrictions, so not everybody came, right? But the show was became so successful that we then export the show to Spain. We went to Bilbao, the Guggenheim Museum, right? So we actually make money from the IP. Now, we don't even own the stuff, right? But we own the IP of the exhibition. So we went to Guggenheim for, I don't know, a few months. And then after that, we went to Porto. Wait, now finally, all the pieces went back to their owners. But the fact is, this is exactly the story of Hong Kong, right? We don't even own any of these stuff, but yet we were able to create a name for ourselves with the best people. So I know a long-winded answer to your question, but Hong Kong's future is bringing the best talent to this town, wherever they come from, and take advantage to this special, unique two system and the East and West. But it's up to us. We have to create this thing. No one's going to tell you how to do it. And it's not going to be always easy. We're going to be some headwinds, but I trust that if we allow the people to be creative, I think too often now we are trying to second guess. I think our biggest hurdle right now is too many people try to second guess what would Beijing want from us or what is good or not good. Mm. Now, especially in time like that, no one really knows what's going to happen, right? So we need to figure this out. How do we take advantage of all this what's happening, right? And in fact, honestly, I find that it's only in crisis that Hong Kong create value. When things are doing so well everywhere else, then people start to think, well, I don't need Hong Kong, right? It's only in time like that, I think, the uniqueness of Hong Kong model is to shine.
Well, they need us now. There's a crisis. It's a world crisis.
Yes.
Bernard, I could speak to you all day long. I know you're busy. I know you have other appointments to go to. I hope that Haldane's Law Matter has been a bit easier than hard talk.
Much easier. You let me talk.
But I'm very grateful you've come in to talk to us today. And you've left us with an awful lot of things to think about and a future to look forward to, because we want to be open. We want to be innovative. We want to welcome people back into Hong Kong and to keep it rolling as an important hub in this region.
Thank you, Jonathan. And I tell you, though, I had to really salute to you for your unfailing commitment to Hong Kong. Wow, my God, how many decades now?
I've been here
four decades.
47 years.
My gosh. So nowhere else, I mean, put me to shame. I think you know Hong Kong more than I do. So your commitment and your unfailing support to us is more so important. I need more people like you to come forward and to lead everyone else to come back and understand who we are.
Bernard, you're very kind with those words. I love this city. It's been very kind to me, as it has to many, many people who have been guests in the town, and we support it going forward. Thank you for coming in today. We'll
thank you.
Have you back again, if we may.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.